Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. If you've ever experienced the discomforts of salmonella poisoning, you know it's not fun, but it's comforting to know that most strains of the bacteria are either harmless or mild enough that we can recover completely within a couple of days. There are some strains, though, notably one called Salmonella Heidelberg, that are severe enough to require hospitalization and can even be fatal. USDA meat inspectors are aware that rates of infection associated with commercially produced poultry have been rising in recent years. But as my guest discovered, unlike the zero-tolerance policy enacted for E. coli bacteria, there is very little the feds can do to force producers not to sell poultry known to be tainted with salmonella. David Hoffman is an investigative reporter for Frontline. His documentary, The Trouble with Chicken, airs tonight on Frontline at 9 on KERA Channel 13 television. David, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having me.
The film begins with one of those nightmare stories. A previously healthy toddler suddenly gets very sick. For a while, nobody can figure out what the problem is. They realize he has a brain abscess and that it's caused ultimately by this virulent strain of salmonella.
This Salmonella Heidelberg can get into the bloodstream, and that's what makes it more dangerous. You know, there's more than 2,000 types of salmonella. That's a lot, and like you said, a lot of them are harmless. But this one can be really dangerous. It can be pretty nasty.
So most people know, David, that salmonella is a bacterium. Do all strains respond to antibiotics?
No, so there are some that are resistant to antibiotics, but I don't think that's the biggest problem in this particular film or this particular set of bacteria. I mean, antibiotic resistance is a problem across all bacteria that we're seeing.
How common are salmonella infections in America? How many do we see in a given year?
Well, every year, about 1 million people are sickened by salmonella. About 19,000 people are hospitalized. 380 or so people die. But one thing I should mention is that the CDC has said that there are a lot of people that get sick, don't go to the hospital or don't go to the doctor. They think that for every reported case, there are 29 cases that go unreported. So if you take that, then there are many, many more millions of people that get sick.
And 200,000 a year are definitely believed to be linked to contaminated poultry. What makes poultry a risky food for this infection?
Well, poultry, you know, chicken and turkey, salmonella is endemic on these birds. They have it from the time they're born. They have it in hatcheries. They have it in the chicken houses on the farms. They have it when they come into the slaughterhouse. It doesn't make the birds sick, but it makes us sick. At least some types do. So the real story here is how, if we're going to be a country that loves chicken, and we do, we eat more chicken than beef. You realize that in the United States every year, we consume 8.5 billion chickens.
Wow.
So if we're going to consume 8.5 billion birds, and you're not going to get rid of all salmonella because it's out there, it's on the farm, how do you control it? How do you get the levels down so that the product is safe when you and I reach for the chicken breast at the grocery store? That's what this is about.
I was surprised to learn, David, how hard it can be to figure out where people pick up these infections, because sometimes they might have nothing to do with food that you've purchased somewhere. It might have happened in your kitchen. How did Oregon health officials first recognize a possible link between one brand of poultry and an outbreak of Salmonella Heidelberg?
Well, you raised two issues. How did they find it? And then how do consumers behave? Let me ask that. How did they find it first? Let me answer that first. These public health officials are like detectives. They have clues and hints. There's a huge amount of data, and they have to sort of sift through. It's finding a needle in a haystack. And in this particular case, what they saw was that people who came in who were getting sick and came to the hospital, they could take the bacteria from the sample, from the patient, and make a genetic fingerprint, like a little barcode. And then by going to the store, by just going to the store like you and me and grabbing chicken from the shelves and testing the chicken, they could also make a DNA fingerprint of that chicken. And when they compared them, they got a match. So the match suggested this person got sick from this kind of chicken. So that repeated over and over, taking a lot of samples, making a lot of fingerprints, began to point toward one chicken company and one factory.
And this is a company called Foster Farms, which is a huge distributor of chicken, particularly on the West Coast and in the western part of the U.S.
That's right. This is a company that started in California as a turkey farm. It was family business originally. It's now very big in the Pacific Northwest and in California. And the genetic fingerprints suggested that the people who were becoming ill were getting it from Foster Farms chicken.
So health officials in Oregon see enough similar cases linked to this producer that they actually start calling these cases the Foster Farms pattern of Salmonella Heidelberg. They contact the company expecting it to say, oh my goodness, let's take care of this. What actually happened?
Well, the company had been through this before. There have been a series of previous outbreaks over the previous decade of the same bacterium, Salmonella Heidelberg. And Oregon officials particularly had asked them about it. And when they did, the company said, oh, we're cleaning it up. And those outbreaks, they were large, but they weren't the biggest. And so a couple years had gone by. So when this one came, the Oregon officials and some officials in Washington state said, you know, we're getting the same thing again. And when they asked Foster Farms, Foster Farms said, you know, we did testing, but we used a different method. And our testing shows that it's not our chicken. Well, public health officials are charged with, they're responsible with doing this detective work and with surveilling the public health and reporting their findings, but they can't go into these factories. In fact, they never did. The factories are regulated instead by the United States Department of Agriculture, an entirely separate organization, and they're the ones who are supposed to be checking these factories and the levels of bacteria. For 3 years before this big outbreak in 2013, the USDA was sampling salmonella in these Foster Farms factories, and we got the records for that for this film, and it shows they weren't detecting salmonella. So there's something wrong in the way they were checking, because people were starting to get sick in 2013 in a very big outbreak. They were getting sick in Oregon, in Washington, and California. And yet the records had suggested there wasn't anything there.
So the company might say, well, you know, we have plausible deniability. Nobody found this in testing. But as it turns out, the way birds are tested and then the patterns by which consumers buy poultry in the grocery store are two very different things.
After the Jack in the Box scandal of 1993, four children died from another bacteria, E. coli. After that, the federal government did begin to sample salmonella in poultry. And they began to set limits where they would say, you know, here's the goal. But this process of sampling oftentimes was one bird a day in a factory where 500,000 birds would be slaughtered. In some places where if there was no positive results, in other words, they didn't find any salmonella after a series of tests, they would let a long period go by, months, before they would test again. So I think the sampling process has a lot to be desired. It has not been effective, and it's not been frequent enough.
And the tests for salmonella on poultry are typically focused on whole birds, and lots of people buy those cuts, or they buy ground turkey or chicken.
This was something that really surprised me. You know, the government said, we are sampling the whole broilers, and here's how often we're doing it, and here's what we're finding. But when we asked, we said, well, what about the chicken parts? Well, they had not been testing the chicken parts. 80% of Americans buy chicken in parts, the breast and the thighs, and they were testing the whole chickens. Now, they have issued new regulations, which they say will be put into place this year, that will also bring this process to chicken parts. But I think there was a big gap there.
And when you test chicken parts, or when this was done in conjunction with this outbreak, 25% of them had salmonella.
You know, they began studying the chicken parts. And I just say, to me, it's amazing it took so long. And they began studying them in 2012. And one of those studies suggested, yeah, about one in four parts had salmonella. Then when this outbreak happened with Foster Farms, I'm now talking about the big outbreak of 2013 and 14, which is at the center of our film. When this happened, the federal government said, you know, it seems that the problem is in the chicken parts. And again, it reinforced the idea that 25% of this chicken had salmonella. And that's a higher level than they wanted to allow. But that's what was the reality in California, Oregon, and Washington. All of us just go to the grocery store. We reach for chicken for dinner. we expect it to be a product that's healthy and safe. And those 600 people who got ill in this outbreak and the 200 or so who were hospitalized, you know, that's what they thought when they bought the chicken, too. But it wasn't. It was contaminated.
Well, help me understand something here, because, you know, you mentioned earlier the Jack-in-the-Box E. coli outbreak in the early 90s. People of a certain age probably recall this. Culprit there was ground beef. But the USDA responded ultimately by setting zero tolerance standards for E. coli. Now they test for salmonella, but there's not a zero tolerance standard for salmonella.
Chris, what they did after Jack-in-the-Box, before young children died in that outbreak, what they did afterwards is they said there's one particular kind of E. coli that caused those children to die and hundreds to get sick. It was called E. coli 0157. So the federal government, in a really watershed moment, said this E. coli will be, from now on, considered an adulterant. And if it's considered an adulterant, it means any hamburger on the market that tests positive, any hamburger that has this E. coli has to be recalled immediately. And they told the producers, this adulterant is not allowed. Get it out of your hamburger. And you know what happened? It worked. The levels of this dangerous E. coli went way down. There has not been another Jack in the Box. To me, that episode shows that when they put their mind to it, the government can have an impact in fighting bacteria. Now, that idea of calling something an adulterant has been opposed by the industry. It was opposed with the hamburger, and the industry, the poultry industry, has opposed naming salmonella an adulterant. Now, you should know there are 2,000 types of salmonella, okay? Not all of them are the same, but some of them, like this Heidelberg, are quite nasty. And there's a debate now. Should some types of salmonella be labeled an adulterant? And if it were, would that bring the levels down to the point where we wouldn't have a big outbreak like we had?
But you're telling us, barring this labeling, that if we walk into the grocery store and want to buy some chicken, and some inspector somewhere has found that the factory producing it has some birds with salmonella, they can still ship that chicken out to my grocery store and I can buy it tomorrow?
It is perfectly legal today to ship chicken out to your grocery store with some salmonella on it. And as many of these factories, including the ones that were producing the chicken involved in this big outbreak, were meeting U.S. government standards for salmonella. So what does that tell you about the standards? I mean, this outbreak, Chris, this 600 people up and down the West Coast, this happened over more than a year. This is not like a chicken potluck supper, right, where a couple people got ill, something was bad in one pot. This was something that rolled on for more than a year. It's very unusual in foodborne outbreaks to have something continue like this, right? Usually, even if it's a bad bunch of cantaloupes or lettuce, it's a short period and the thing fades out. And what was really puzzling to public health officials, and the reason why this is an important moment, is that this was a continuing outbreak. The chicken continued to be shipped from these three plants run by Foster Farms over months. And over those months, every week, almost every day, people were coming to hospital sick with this same salmonella poisoning. So part of the question is, you know, why didn't our government do something? It's one thing to have an outbreak at the beginning. There are always little problems. We live in a bacterial world. It's going to happen. But the real question to me is, what do you do about it?
David Hoffman is with us. He's an investigative reporter for Frontline. The Frontline documentary, The Trouble with Chicken, airs tonight on PBS stations, including KERA Channel 13 television at 9 o'clock. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Summer registration is now open with courses in art, history, literature, and new financial fitness workshops. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Frontline investigative reporter David Hoffman. His documentary, The Trouble with Chicken, airs tonight at 9 on KERA Channel 13 television. You can be part of the conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. David, we all know that there are some pretty nasty bugs that can make us very sick that are rendered harmless if they are cooked to a particular temperature. How careful do we have to be? What kinds of precautions do we have to take as consumers if it is left up to us? And can we be confident that if we know how to, you know, behave and use good hygiene in the kitchen that we're safe?
Yes. You know, the temperature you should cook your chicken to is 165 degrees. I think everybody agrees. Nobody likes chicken that's undercooked. Unlike beef, where we like it rare, everybody wants to cook the chicken. And you know, Chris, that's not where the problem really is. The problem is in preparation of the chicken. Studies, I've seen several of them, are beginning to show that consumers feel very self-confident. I know how to do this. But when they actually do it, they make a lot of mistakes. It's called cross-contamination. And what happens is people take the raw chicken, and oftentimes, for example, they wash it in the sink. Big mistake. Because when you wash it, you splatter the salmonella bacteria all over the place. And it just takes a tiny drop to infect you, to get you sick. Or they cut the raw chicken with a knife, and then they use the same knife, and maybe they wipe it off with a dish towel, and the salmonella gets on their hands, and then they use the knife to prepare the salad. So this problem of how you handle that chicken before cooking it, that's where a lot of the illness problem comes from, and that's the thing you really should pay very careful attention to.
Foster Farms, the company at the center of this investigation, would not talk to you for the report, but you did have a sit-down interview with someone from Cargill, which is another large meat producer linked to a salmonella outbreak in 2011. And people may be surprised to hear this. Cargill actually comes off looking pretty proactive and responsible here.
Well, we were trying to learn the lessons of that Cargill outbreak. That was a ground turkey outbreak, the same Salmonella Heidelberg, and it was a multi-state outbreak from an industrial-sized, you know, processing facility. And I wanted to know from Cargill, how did you handle this and what lessons did you learn? And I think it was quite interesting because the Cargill, they at first took a while to figure out what was going on, but once they did, they instituted a recall. It's painful for a company to have to recall. Not only do you lose all those sales, but it's a black mark on your reputation. They closed the plant down, and those people didn't have work for weeks. They had to clean the plant, which, by the way, is huge. You see it in the film. It's a giant factory where these turkeys go through at 40 miles an hour on conveyor belts. But the lesson was, if we have a problem, they said to me, you know, we had to recall. It was the right thing to do to get the product off the market so more people wouldn't get sick. And we use this to contrast with what happened in the big outbreak in California. There, the chicken was sent to the market day after day and week after week for more than 15 months. There was no recall until the very end. And during that time, a lot of people got sick. And I think that there's a very strong argument to be made. They wouldn't have if the plants have been shut down, if there had been a recall, if measures have been taken at the beginning of the problem.
How is it possible, David, that the USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service, which has agents at every slaughterhouse in America, could not require a recall as soon as it became clear that there was an outbreak of serious disease?
This is the really most important question of this film, because this outbreak. Public health officials were ringing the alarm. It was two states, three states. It ultimately goes to more than 20 states. And their federal officials are in those plants. Well, one thing is this. The federal food safety inspectors have set a criteria for when they can ask for a recall. And they require three different kinds of evidence. One piece of evidence is a patient who's sick with that Salmonella Heidelberg. That can be tested. Those were found. They were on hand. The second piece of evidence would be samples of that chicken from the grocery store with that same Salmonella Heidelberg. That was on hand. So they said even though those things matched, and even though a top federal official told us in the film that it was convincing evidence, it wasn't convincing enough for them to ask for a recall. They said that they had to find a piece of contaminated chicken unopened in the freezer of somebody who had already gotten sick. And if they found that third piece of evidence, then there could be a recall. So I think that that standard is ridiculous. And I think that what they were doing, they were very passive and timid, even as the public health emergency was gathering steam, even as the number of victims went from 100 to 200 to 300. And finally, in October of 2013, they issued a warning, a public health warning, and they sent a letter to the company saying, you know, if you don't fix this, we might have to pull the inspectors and force you to close. And Foster Farm said, we're going to fix it. Don't worry. Months went by. More people got ill. So this passivity is very, very worrisome to me. And when we ask them about it, they say, you know, there are court cases. Salmonella is not an adulterant, as we discussed before. Our hands are tied. We don't have enough authority. That's the situation we're in today. We had a public health crisis of people getting sick. We had federal inspectors in the poultry plants. There was no recall.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. On the phone now, we go to Manfred in Dallas. Hi, Manfred.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Very important subject. I'm wondering if budget cuts had something to do with the lax inspections. It's been happening that regulators are under attack from financial regulation to industrial safety regulation. Has public policy, because of the lobbying of the industry lobbying, has something to do with this? Or is it just a combination of antiquated rules and, you know, lax regulation?
Manfred, that question anticipates the entire rest of the film we haven't talked about yet. So that is a great series of questions. David, you want to take some of those?
Sure. First of all, Manfred, I don't think it's actually a budget question. There are inspectors in all these plants. I think it's a couple of other things, including the fact that, you know, for a century, meat inspection by these inspectors meant looking for things you could see or smell. You know, they look for bruises and broken bones and feathers or whatnot. But salmonella bacteria, all bacteria, are invisible. And in recent years, the federal government has started to sample more and more products for bacteria. But the truth is that the danger here that we're talking about, this big outbreak, was caused by bacteria, not by the things that the inspectors traditionally look for. This is shifting. They're trying to deal with more with the invisible bacteria, but they clearly hadn't done enough for those 600 people that got sick.
When you talk about, you know, these, what they're looking for, broken bones and bruises, some of these standards were set a century ago when Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle.
And some of them are quite out of date. Furthermore, even the sampling they do of the bacteria, you know, when they actually do look for the invisible bacteria, is quite infrequent. We found that oftentimes these plants will process 100,000, 300,000 birds in a 24-hour period, and the federal government will sample one.
Assuming that that one bird is representative of everything else on the line that day or that week.
And not only that, if a facility passes for a while and there are no signs of salmonella, then they can go for months without having a sample taken. There'll be long periods without testing. And again, I think that this will change some, but up until now, and certainly during this outbreak, it seems to me that some of the sampling for bacteria has been not frequent enough and not effective enough.
And again, just to not to beat a dead horse, sorry, that pun is awful. If they do find salmonella, there's nothing the federal inspectors can do.
The federal government claims that their authorities are limited because of several court cases. As I mentioned, salmonella is not an adulterant. If it was an adulterant, they would be able to act. Well, if it's not an adulterant, they claim that because of these court cases, they can't act. Now, we've asked them and members of Congress, you know, shouldn't you give these inspectors a little more authority to go after these bacteria? And, you know, Congress members have been saying, we'd like to give some more authority, but they haven't voted it. And the Secretary of Agriculture was interviewed for our film, and he said, look, you know, don't ask me to do things I can't do. My hands are tied by these cases, and Congress hasn't given us more authority. It's kind of a standoff, Chris, and I think it explains some of the passivity that Manfred was asking us about.
But then you have a wonderful scene with a congresswoman who is talking to Secretary Vilsack saying, why haven't you asked us for more authority?
And the secretary says, well, you know, our hands are tied by these court rulings. And then he just sits quietly. He doesn't ask for more authority. They haven't. And Congress hasn't passed any either, by the way. And I would just give the Obama administration one credit, though. They did realize that it is a little ridiculous to have such a fragmented government approach to food safety, because we do have a lot of different agencies involved with it. The two big ones are the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration. And the president proposed in his budget this year to create one food safety agency. But I don't think there's any chance that Congress is going to go along with it.
Would it be a really complicated thing, David? I understand that there are many strains of salmonella that might be present in the poultry we would eat that are not going to harm anybody. But would it be so hard to test specifically for the ones that are likely to cause serious illness and declare those adulterants without the added maybe burden of, you know, throwing out a lot of chicken that is healthy to eat, but it does have a form of salmonella on it?
This is a debate that needs to happen now, Chris. And I think people, consumers, need to be aware that the government right now tolerates a fair amount of the salmonella on their chicken. So if it was declared an adulterant, then it would be up to the producers to get it out, right? And the producers would have some expense. I mean, this would be a problem for the industry because the salmonella comes in the door of the slaughterhouse from the chicken houses, and it, you know, it starts in the hatcheries. So that whole process of the farm as well as the slaughterhouse would have to be changed. But I must say that Cargill, after they had that outbreak in 2011, they looked at the farm. They looked upstream, so to speak, before the slaughterhouse, and they found ways to try and reduce salmonella levels. It's also possible in the slaughtering process, if you find it's contaminated in that process, instead of wrapping it up and sending it to the grocery store, you can divert it to cookers where it's cooked actually in the plant. The salmonella are killed, and that becomes a cooked product. It's different. It's not the same as a raw product. So that sort of dividing line would help you from sending that salmonella-contaminated chicken out to grocery stores. And that's what we need, is a way to protect public health, right? When you and I go there and grab for the chicken breast for the weekend cookout, we want to believe already someone is taking care of it.
Is the reason that parts might be contaminated at higher rates than whole chickens that, you know, the same knives are used by people doing the butchering on multiple birds, and so if one happens to be contaminated, that can spread?
Well, it's a slightly different answer, but it's close. First of all, the way these birds are turned from whole to parts is a giant machine, and it goes, you know, all at once. The whole bird is cut into 8 pieces or 10 or whatever. And one of the things that the science shows is that the process of cutting it, it's not the knife, but the salmonella bacteria can be in the skin, in the hair follicles. It can be part of the organism of the bird, and it's released by the cutting it. So then when the parts go down that conveyor belt, there's more salmonella released, even if the whole chicken tested negative.
Hmm. We have an email here from Vicky in Dallas who wants to know, if one buys organic chicken, is there less chance of contamination?
I don't think this is a question about organic or regular chicken. It's not a question necessarily about antibiotic-free or regular. It's not a question about which store. This is a question about all the raw chicken and the policy of our government and how we prepare that chicken for consumers and what kind of care is taken, what kind of procedures are followed in these giant slaughterhouses and in this whole industrial chain to protect public health. And so I think that as consumers, this is not the kind of thing where you can just quickly change your store or change your brand. We have a bigger problem.
Do those antibiotics that are pumped into animals produced commercially, my understanding is they're often used just to fatten the animals up, but do they do anything to reduce the possibility of disease later on?
Well, this was the subject of our last film, and it's a really interesting question because the antibiotics that are fed to chickens and other animals who are not sick, in low doses, routinely fed to them, put in their feed and in their water, are used for growth promotion, a until recently anyway. And by growth promotion, it means you can grow the chicken to a larger weight in the same period of time and on the same amount of feed. And for many decades, this is how antibiotics were used in agriculture. It was effective. And only in recent years, I wouldn't say just recent, but I mean in a recent decade or two, we began to see more and more antibiotic resistance. In other words, the bacteria were fighting back against the antibiotics. And this happened in human health and in animal health. So just recently, last year, the Food and Drug Administration came out with guidelines intended to essentially curb the use of antibiotics for growth promotion, like you just described. However, the FDA will continue to allow the use of these antibiotics on whole herds of and flocks of animals that are well, that are not sick, to prevent disease. So by putting low doses of antibiotics into their feed and into their water, the goal is to prevent them from getting sick in the time before slaughter. Now, this may have the same effect as giving it to them for growth promotion. It may just be a different word. You're still going to be giving large amounts of antibiotics to animals, but I think it's at least the first step that they struck off the label that were growth promotion, which was really leading to resistance to antibiotics, a problem for us and for our health, as well as for the animals.
What are factories doing now, poultry producers, to reduce the presence of salmonella that might be there during meat processing? Can the meat be washed or irradiated? What happens to it?
Well, they do a lot already, and you'll see in the film how, for example, at Cargill, how these turkeys are put in giant vats of sort of a vinegary water solution to try. And so a lot of processing things are done. I think the real challenge for the industry, besides specific plants where there are outbreaks like the one that we describe in the film, the real problem is going to be salmonella is endemic on poultry, on all these birds. They got to look on the farm and in the hatcheries.
My guest is David Hoffman. He's an investigative reporter for Frontline. His documentary, The Trouble with Chicken, airs tonight on Frontline at 9 on KERA Channel 13 television. We'll be back to our conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Summer registration is now open with courses in art, history, literature, and new financial fitness workshops. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Frontline investigative reporter David Hoffman about the documentary The Trouble with Chicken that airs tonight at 9 on KERA Channel 13 television. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. So, David, the feds issued warnings to consumers saying, watch out for this. They warned foster farms to reduce contamination, or they would stop inspecting the meat. They couldn't force the recall. Suddenly, ultimately, the USDA did shut down one foster farm's plant due to discovery of cockroaches in the plant rather than the salmonella itself, which was definitely causing illness. It kind of reminds me of like getting Al Capone on tax evasion charges.
You said it better than I. You know, this was another thing where our system is geared toward things we can see. You know, the inspectors, obviously, cockroaches are gross, and if you see them there, you don't want them in the facility, of course. But what I don't understand is why you would allow invisible bacteria that are infecting people and sending them to the hospital to go into chicken that went to grocery stores for more than a year. I mean, that's worse. That's a more serious threat.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Gerardo on the line in Allen. Hi, Gerardo.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm calling to check on his comment about whether the chickens produced here can be exported to places, say, like Europe, because I've heard that Europe won't take our chickens, probably for some of these reasons.
What do you know about that, David?
Well, there is a big export market for chicken. In fact, Russians love chicken legs, and Americans like chicken breasts. And we began sending those chicken legs to Russia right after the Cold War ended. They were called Bush legs because President Bush then arranged for that. And they're still beloved by Russians today, despite the sanctions that we have now, which is probably going to interrupt things. Look, we have a good and food safety system in the United States that overall we ought to be thankful for. It certainly is heads and shoulders above where other people live around the world. But there's some flaws in it, and there's some real systemic problems that ought to be addressed because we ought to demand more. It's not rocket science here. This is not some kind of impossible dream. I think we can fix this system. From all I can see, people know. Just take this problem of two different agencies, right? If you buy peanut butter and it's got salmonella in it, that falls under the Food and Drug Administration. They have zero tolerance for salmonella in your peanut butter. It will have to be recalled. And all the other jars on the shelf will have to be recalled right away. No ifs, ands, or buts. But if you buy raw chicken and it has salmonella in it, our government says, okay, well, I think that we ought not have one standard for peanut butter and one standard for raw meat. We ought not have two different agencies. Look, we're never going to get all the salmonella out of raw chicken. Bacteria is a part of raw poultry and beef. But the E. coli example showed, when we put our mind to it, when we take action, it is possible. It might make chicken a little bit more expensive. It might cause disruption. But do we want to have a system where 600 people get sick unknowingly because of bacteria in the chicken that our government tolerates?
Are the people who tend to get really sick, is it mostly the elderly and the very young and people who already have health problems?
Well, certainly when you have a bacteria like this Salmonella Heidelberg, people who are more vulnerable, the very young and the elderly, are certainly at a greater risk. But, you know, when I look at the profile of the people that got sick, 15% of all of those who came down with this got blood infections. So part of the thing here is not only about who is the patient, but it's about what is the bacteria. And this particular bacteria has a tendency to produce these blood infections. Half of them were men, half of them were women, and the median age was 18 years. So it's not as if they were all either very young or very old.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next on the line to Cindy in Grandview. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. You mentioned earlier about one of the bad things we can do is to wash the chicken in the sink, but I've always heard that due to the fecal bath that they float in at the plant, it needs to be washed. So what do you recommend? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Washing the chicken in the sink is a leading cause of cross-contamination. I mean, if you can wash your chicken in the sink without splattering it, then if you've got a magician's hands and can make that happen, maybe it's safe. But I would recommend, and the experts recommend, don't wash your chicken in the sink because you're spreading the bacteria. Put it right on the grill or put it right in the pan. And if it's hot enough, 165 degrees, you shouldn't have any problem. What you want to avoid is the chicken juice, the chicken itself, which has the bacteria spreading to other parts of your kitchen. Nobody's kitchen is a sterile hospital ward. We realize that we live in a world of bacteria. We're just trying to minimize the spread of the things that make us sick.
Some of this can make you a little paranoid when you're cooking dinner.
I think it's good to have a little bit of fear.
Just as a precaution, be sure. Should we assume when we're cooking chicken and poultry that it's contaminated and behave accordingly?
Absolutely. But I don't think that that should detract from your ability to cook healthy food, to enjoy healthy food. This country's crazy about chicken, and if we're going to have 8.5 billion chickens a year processed through mega factories on an industrial scale, then it's important as consumers that we at least be smart about what's in that package and what's the best way to handle it.
Something that gets back to what you were saying earlier, David, about, you know, we need to look at the sources of this contamination all down the line of chicken processing from the farm to the plant to the store. Tracy sends a tweet asking, is this an industrial process problem or a poultry problem?
I think it's both. It's a poultry problem because salmonella is endemic. The bacteria are on all the birds. But we don't have mom and pop poultry processing, or for that matter, we don't really have mom and pop farms that produce these. I mean, it's a large system. There may be some smaller farms, but they're working for these large producers. So that industrial system not only has changed the way we grow the chickens, but also the way we distribute them. And we now have, what, 500,000 chickens go through a plant in one day, and they're put on trucks, and they're trucked across state lines, far away. This particular outbreak in 2013 and 14, which is the subject of our film, spread to more than 20 states. And it's very common that products that with contamination cause multi-state outbreaks. The Cargill outbreak of that ground chicken was in multiple states. So that's a feature that we live with today. We aren't going back to the earlier age. We just have to make the one we have safe.
Back to the phones now at 800-933-5372. Everett is on the line in Arlington. Hi, Everett.
Hello. Hello. Almost 20 years ago, I did some work on a chicken farm and had this discussion about salmonella. And they said they have been offered competing strains of bacteria that would outcompete the salmonella and basically push it out of the system. But they couldn't use it because it caused the birds to gain weight faster and not fit the producer's requirements. So the birds had to be at a certain age, at a certain time when they were to be picked up to go through the factory at a given size, and it was unacceptable to actually make them do better.
Well, I thank you for your call, Everett. I haven't heard, David, about, probiotics in poultry production, but is this something that you looked into?
This is not something I looked into, no.
Mm-hmm. All right, so as we decide what we're going to be eating and we want to be healthy, do we as consumers even have a right to know that there is a suspicion of things? Like, is a sticker placed on, you know, when the USDA issues these warnings to consumers, is there a sticker placed on all the product that we might buy, or is it just like a press release that, you know, maybe finds its way onto a website somewhere?
Well, think about these 600 people that got sick in 2013 and 14, right? In these three states, they're just like you and me. They're going and buying their chicken. The warning labels were on there, cook it properly, approved by the USDA. It didn't say, by the way, the chicken you're picking up could have one in four chances of being contaminated with a virulent and very nasty salmonella. Now, that is a reality. That is a fact. One thing we can do is to try and get the levels of the salmonella down below where they cause a threat to human health, down below where they make people sick, even if you cross-contaminate. Or maybe some people have talked about labeling some of these strains of salmonella as adulterants, which would trigger a whole different approach. There are things that can be done. As I said, I think we know what the possibilities are. But this passivity and timidity that this outbreak, the government just standing by as the packages rolled out of the factory to the grocery store week after week, is inexplicable.
Your focus in this film is entirely on meat and not on eggs. But I wonder if we can extrapolate that some of the same kinds of contamination exist in the eggs we might buy.
You know, I'm just not qualified to talk about that. I worked pretty hard, more than a year on this film to deal with this problem of chicken. 8.5 billion chickens.
Goodness. 800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Lori in Flower Mound. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I've got a question regarding cooking implements. If you're cooking, like, let's say, cut up chicken breast and it's in a stir fry, and obviously there could be salmonella on the chicken. Eventually the chicken in the pan gets cooked, or any meat in the pan gets cooked. But at what point are the germs on the implements that you just touched that chicken with, at what point are the germs on the implements going to also die off? And I'll take any answer you have off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Well, obviously if you heat everything there to more than 165 degrees, you essentially sterilize it. But if what you're saying is that you're going to remove implements that have not reached that level of heat, in other words, where it's possible the salmonella was coated on the surface, and you're going to put them into the salad or do something else with them, that's dangerous because the salmonella is pretty hardy. It can live, for example, in the coolness of that of your refrigerator. There have been some cases where even frozen foods, they've lived for a while. It can live on surfaces in your kitchen for 2 weeks. Can live on the sponge. So the salmonella is pretty hardy. Treat it with respect.
Almost every cleaning product sold for the kitchen tells us that it is antibacterial. Is it enough to assume that if we've wiped a surface down, that we've gotten anything that's bad for us?
We all make mistakes as consumers, but I think it is possible to keep this dangerous bacteria away from us by taking the precautions of wiping down. I think that this is not some kind of complex problem we have. It's do the simple things right, and you keep yourself and your family healthy.
We have an email from Paul who wants to know whether people affected by this outbreak are filing civil lawsuits or a class action lawsuit.
Several of the victims, at least several, maybe more, have either filed claims or settled with Foster Farms. Most of the details of those settlements are secret. We don't know what they are.
When you went into the Cargill plant, which was the only place that would actually allow you to take a crew in there, did you get the sense that the people there actually, care about doing this right? And I don't mean to give particular kudos to them, but do you feel like the industry cares, or did you feel there was a sense of just doing the minimum possible?
Well, I think it's hard to generalize, but let me put it this way. In Cargill, they went through the pain of having an outbreak. Somebody died in that outbreak. They had to have a recall. They had to shut the plant down and clean it. At least it was an example of responding to the problem. And, the federal government didn't force them to make that recall. They did it. In this case in California, where we have actually many more people getting sick, 600, and 200 or so of them hospitalized, for me, the really big question is, why did it go on so long? And, in this case, I think Foster Farms, the company involved, could have raised their hand and volunteered like a student with the right answer in class and say, look, it's us. We're going to recall it. We're going to stop. We're going to close. We're going to clean up. And had they done that at the beginning, maybe all those people wouldn't have gotten sick. But they didn't do that. And the recall is a tool. It's just a tool. But it could be effective in keeping this from spreading and preventing more and more people from getting ill. And it wasn't used here. Meanwhile, the federal government sitting there with Foster Farms, they also didn't do anything. So that the kind of question we should be asking our government and our companies, of course they care. No company wants to have a product that makes people sick. But once they know about it, what are they doing about it?
David Hoffman is an investigative reporter for Frontline, the Frontline documentary The Trouble with Chicken airs tonight on PBS stations around the country, including KERA Channel 13 television tonight at 9. David, it's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you so much for making this time for us.
Chris, thanks for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer, but she produced today's show. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.